Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand and Auckland, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. To season 4, episode number 14 of Cinematica. My name is Dan Slevin, and I'm sitting in an office in Auckland. Down the Skype line from me in the Cinematica studio are
Neely Carruthers
in the hot seat.
Yeah, recording tech for today.
Well done. Well, sounding good so far.
Oh. And me myself, I.
Excellent. Or me myself, Cy.
That's I like that one.
Yeah.
Good work.
Yeah, that's your new email signature. You can have that for free.
Yeah.
Thank you.
In today's episode of the show, Cinematica interviews our first superstar. Yes, The World's End's Nick Frost. We also review that movie. Pacific Rim is also in the show. And, of course, it's school holiday time, so we're going to talk about all of the animated school holiday fare released so that you can keep the kids out of your hair this July. But first, before we get on to all of that, shall we have a look at what's in the mailbag? Kaylee?
Indeed. A lot has been going on Twitter recently, so thank you, everyone. Our, you know, usual Twitter friends and new Twitter friends as well. So we have a tweet from Library Chris, who was kind enough to take Dan and I's photo on the red carpet at the World's End premiere. That was nice.
It was the one moment where it felt red carpety.
Yeah, because we were trying to get on the red carpet. And we're like, no, go to the other end of the red carpet. And we had to walk
to the plebs end of the red carpet.
Yeah, that happened to me. It was a bit of debate about which end to go to, but then
we were told.
And I assumed that's what would happen.
You didn't say, do you know who I am?
I've tried that before and it doesn't, you know, no respect.
Oh, how rude. So Library Chris says, two word review for The World's End is fighting humanity. What I really want is fighting humanness, but I don't believe humanness is actually a word. But that doesn't matter, for the record.
No, we make words up all the time. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. Rudy Six says, I'm so excited for Cinematica cast in Auckland next week. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Us too.
I've got one here. Shay Tibby, who is in Newlands, on the basis of my brief sort of mention of Despicable Me last week, decided he was going to take his little one to see the film this weekend, and we got a two word review from his child tweets as Chef du Plunge. And we have a two-word review. I think he's about 4.5. And a two-word review from him is quite funny.
Well done. Very good.
Thank you.
Well done. From someone who's not quite 4 years old, the Merca says, Pacific Rim, monster mashup. Nicely done. And Miriam Ruth Ross said, her run on Friday night was very much helped by the shout-out, although laughing over the explicit content didn't help.
Yeah, it was a bit rough last week.
It was awesome.
Yeah, we've really got to regain our decorum this week.
No, it's
overrated.
Because of all the new listeners.
Yeah. I barely had enough decorum to get through that Nick Frost interview, let me tell you.
Well, we'll talk about that in a wee while. We'll give people the lowdown on what it's like to be part of the official media junket for a big Hollywood, well, not Hollywood, but Hollywood-like picture released by one of the major studios and featuring all the stars. This was our first opportunity to be part of to play with the big guys.
To be real media.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little while. But before we get to that, what has New Zealand been watching?
So in at number 5 this week, down from 2, Man of Steel. Sitting at number 4, Monsters University. In at number 3, The Heat. At number 2, Pacific Rim, and holding on to first place, Despicable Me 2.
Wow.
The children are speaking.
Yeah, so Pacific Rim only in at number 2, and The Heat, which we haven't seen yet, at least I haven't. Have you seen it yet, Kaylee?
No.
No, we're going to have to push that one to next week's show because I'm sure it'll be worth our attention. It's such a busy time, isn't it? The school holidays and all of these big Hollywood pictures and The Heat, which is, you know, doing big bics around the world, not on our radar as yet. So I apologize to all of the Sandra Bullock fans listening.
Yes. And Melissa McCarthy fans.
Oh, of course, yes.
And also indeed. Not to mention that the Auckland leg of the film festival opens on Thursday, so we have a lot of prep for that too. There's so much going on.
Yeah, exactly. And last night was the final, the national final of the 48 Hours competition, and one of the reasons why I've been in Auckland this week was to represent Wellington there and make sure that everything went according to plan, which of course it did. A Wellington film took out the national competition for the second year in a row, so very happy at that state of affairs. Congratulations to the team, Traces of Nut, and to Dean Hewison and the 10-year-old star, Nova Waratini Hewison, who won the Best Actress Award. And oh, she was just so cute on the civic stage. Yeah, it was very, very excellent night.
Mm-hmm.
Very excellent, Dan.
Yeah, look at how I'm using my words. All right. So The World's End, that was the highlight of the weekend. All three of us got to see the film at the premiere, and we'll do a proper review of the film in a while, and Simon's going to help us out with that. But the weekend itself, Wellington sort of ground to a halt, partly because of the weather and partly because of the presence in town of the three stars of The World's End. And then the big surprise was the arrival on the red carpet of Benedict Cumberbatch, who I didn't even know was in Wellington.
No, and I heard rumour that he made the decision to come at the last minute, and he didn't have a security detail. That's probably why he's so panicked the whole time.
He looked kind of scared.
Surrounded by these crazy teenagers.
How did he get a seat? It was sold out. Unbelievable.
House seats, mate. House seats.
Yeah, you always got the house seats, haven't you? Yeah.
Exactly. And interestingly, that he basically would have flown out the next day because the...
I know. I was thinking about those guys.
Like, yeah. Flying out the next day. And he was in Tokyo on Monday for the Japanese premiere of Star Trek Into Darkness. So, you know, he was doing another red carpet for a completely different film. On Monday. It's interesting how long that's taken to make its way around the world.
Yeah, it has, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. But that's, boy, oh boy.
That poor guy.
I mean, that's, it's doing a few Ks, isn't it?
It's hard work, isn't it? So after the all of the red carpet paraphernalia, and Kaylee and I, we went into the theatre relatively early because the bar at the embassy was so jam-packed. We just thought, oh, we've got to get out of these crowds. We got our cornettos and we went and sat in our seats, row U, where all of the best people were sitting, I think. We sat there and we watched the red carpet on the big screen. They had a multi-camera feed of what was going on outside in the cold and the freezing rain with all of the poor people who'd been standing out there all afternoon. And so we actually got the best seats in the house, I reckon, to watch all of that. We weren't actually in the physical presence of the stars, but we got to see them and listen to the interviews and watch them signing autographs. So it was pretty good.
Hmm.
And for some reason, and Kaylee, you'll remember this too, for some reason everybody, once they sat down in their seats in the theatre, decided to take photographs of themselves.
Yeah, that was great.
Even after being asked not to, there was a few sort of, you know, please don't record this. People
exactly,
going.
They were taking photographs of everything. But it was just like while they were waiting around, they would just take photos of themselves with the flash on.
It was quite a neat shot, though, having the screen outside with the stars and then capturing yourself.
Yeah, that's not what they were doing.
It was just like any generic movie theatre. They could have done it at any point.
I saw a few people doing that, so you could get them in the background. You know,
that would have made sense.
That did make sense,
The people the girls in front of us who were like letting their full camera flash off, like in our eyeballs, that was not the case. It was basically Dan and I in the back.
So they knew who you were and they took photos of you.
Actually, I didn't think of that, Dan. That's probably why.
That's right.
Maybe that was it. Yeah, maybe that was why they took 30.
Yeah, trying to get the best photo of our kneecaps.
That's so they can get you, show you running.
Yeah.
See?
After we'd seen the movie on Saturday night, we were obviously pretty sort of buzzed about that. It was a very successful premiere.
What a huge crowd, though. The fizz that those guys let off once the stars arrived, got in the cinema, and it really was a really huge atmosphere. It was a lot of fun.
It was. It's like a rock and roll tour, isn't it, for these guys? They just fly into somewhere, they make some personal appearances, and then they off to the next thing. Yep. But it's like doing a rock tour when the only thing you actually have to do is that "Hello Springfield" part of the deal, and you don't actually have to play any songs.
Yep.
Because the film's made. It's like it's not quite as onerous as being sort of Spinal Tap or whatever, you know, going from city to city. But it's still, you know, it's still all the travel must be just so tough on them.
Hmm.
And so the following day we rocked up at Foxglove in Wellington, which is where all of the media were huddled out of the freezing wind and rain, and we'd been given our 10-minute time slot to interview Nick Frost and told we had to be there 20 minutes early to make sure that we'd booked in and they knew we were here. Kaylee, you got there first, didn't you?
I did, and sat down, got myself a cup of tea and then proceeded to wait for an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yeah, pretty much. They were running 90 minutes late by the time they started. The word was that the guys had had a pretty big night the night before. You know, they don't come to Wellington very often, and there was a tour of Park Road Post, apparently. Peter Jackson, you know, wanted to show off all his new toys. And so, yeah, I don't think they got to bed pretty late, and it was a reasonably early call for all the media stuff. But, yeah, we were quite a long way behind, and we were already fairly down the queue anyway. Mm. for that. And I timed our interview, Kaylee, once I'd seen the recording. And because we were scheduled for 10 minutes, we were basically given the 1 minute to go signal after one question. and lovely Nick Frost, who was a pleasure to talk to, basically, I'd never seen sort of movie star behavior up close like this. He basically just waved the guy away.
It was really nice.
I'm having a nice time.
Yeah, it was really nice. Like, and I don't think I'll ever get the chance again to thank Nick Frost personally, but thank you so much, because he was just so generous and so lovely to just be like, okay, like, get away, I'm talking to these people. It was really nice. Yeah. Seeing as when exactly. I sat down, I was shaking like a chihuahua. Like, I could not stop shaking. I was so excited and so nervous. And then, Dan, afterwards, you offered me a hug, because I probably looked like I was about to cry, because I was just like, oh my God, it just happened.
Well, this is the interesting thing about it, is that you know, I don't want to sound blasé about this stuff, but there's always that sense, if you the higher you get beforehand, the lower the come down is afterwards. Mm. And I've always hated that feeling of sort of deflation, or that, you know, once you've finished an event, or once you've finished an interview, or you've met a celebrity or what have you, and that come down, that sort of depression can really sort of put a dent in your day. So I now don't do the high part at the beginning. I try not to get too excited about these things in advance, and therefore, you know, everything sort of levels out. But it was wonderful fun watching you be super excited, because, you know, I haven't been that excited about anything in years, frankly. Mm. I'm just Mr. Yeah. Mm. But I mean, we and as you'll hear from the interview when we play it very shortly, I tried not to talk about football, but I couldn't help myself.
It just started.
It did. It was just the conversation, wasn't it? So anyway, what we'll do is we'll play the interview that we did with Nick Frost, and you'll learn a little bit about the world's end, and then we will talk about the movie.
Hi, I'm Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, nice to meet you.
All right.
This is Kaylee.
And I thought Kelly was going to stop my security.
How are you?
Yeah, it's the Canadian thing. They're always like, excuse me.
Is he a Canadian?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so we're just recording off this one, and yeah, there's a spare one here. Good, good.
How you doing?
You got West Ham? Yeah, you have.
Yeah. I thought I'd wear this.
Fantastic.
Yeah. You heard the score from last night?
2-0.
2-0?
Yeah. Collison, Nolan.
That's it. Fantastic. Yeah. I'm sure it was the first thing you checked this morning, was it?
That's the one thing that, if I'm around the world, that I'm guaranteed to burn money on my bill, is getting on 3G internationally to look at the score. Or to look at transfer news.
Right.
Who we've bought, who we haven't bought, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's looking good for this year. We won't talk about football for too long, because we've got a Canadian at the table, but...
yeah, football in Canada?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Even in Vancouver.
Yeah. What's the Vancouver football team called? Like the Vancouver...
The Whitecaps.
The Whitecaps.
Yeah.
It sounds weird and oddly gynecological.
Excellent. Well... Kaylee's going to start off. Oh,
we're going to start off.
I'm going to start off. Okay, we run New Zealand's favourite movie podcast.
Yeah.
Called Cinematica, and one of our things is that once we've done a review, we try and sum up a film in two words. We have this thing called a two-word review.
Yeah.
So at the end of our interview with you, we would love if you could do a two-word review of The World's End for
okay.
us. So I'll just give you a little bit of a.
Heads up.
We'll seed that.
Okay.
Yeah, and we'll see.
I know it's really stressful. We thought we'd give you pre-warning.
Yeah. My glasses off. That's my face. Wearily. Okay.
It is one of the hardest things in the business to do. Nick Frost, welcome to Cinematica.
Thanks for having me, New Zealand.
It's a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah.
We saw the film last night. We absolutely adored it. It's okay. Just a fantastic summing up of the relationship that you guys have built over the last 10 years. I wanted to ask you first of all about the Englishness of the work that you've been doing, you know, because it's a subtext that runs through all three of those films.
Yeah.
It's sort of what it's like to be in England in this modern world.
Well, to live and, you know, to leave school and to be at school and to love and to not love and to punch and to, you know, we're English filmmakers, you know, and it would be easy to make a film and, you know, you see people doing it all the time where they make a film where they try and please American audiences and British audiences or, you know, vice versa, and it tends to fall in the ocean and become slightly diluted, but you know, what we've always done is we've, you know, stuck to our roots in terms of us being Englishmen,
yeah.
and filmmakers, and we've been very lucky that I think because of that, people all over the world have enjoyed it, you know, and found that you can understand what people are saying, even if it's slightly different to what, you know, to your own language. You know, it's like watching, you know, I grew up watching American films, and even though I didn't necessarily understand all the references, you understand what they mean, you know, and especially this day and age too, with there being a million search engines. If you don't know what a Twinkie is, Google it.
Yeah.
You know.
Just don't Google it in the theatre.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and my, at the cinema the other night when we watched the world premiere, My wife got a phone out, and I said, "What are you doing? Split away." And she said, "We've got a baby." She said, "I'm just checking the baby's all right." And it was like, "Split away." It was like, "If they can see the lights on the screen, it'll kill us."
Well, last night while we were waiting for the film to start, the whole cinema seemed to be full of people taking photographs of themselves.
Sure.
Which seems to be a very new thing. This was not a thing.
Why?
I know. I don't know. To prove to
Dan
themselves
that
they were
there. And asked the girls to stop.
Because the flash was going off in our face. They were just like doing this all the time.
What were they doing? There's Twitter in it or Instagram in it?
No, I
think they were Facebooking.
Maybe. Facebooking, probably.
Is that thing still around?
What's your next question, Kaylee?
Going on a more serious topic.
Sure.
So in this film, you're sort of the emotional core. You get to play, as they say, the straight man.
Yeah.
You know? What sort of emotional prep did that take, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah. Hang on, sorry, I'm saying yeah. It's my tea's arriving. We're on radio, so on the podcast, so I thought I better. Thanks so much. Now, it's at points like that I feel like I've arrived as some kind of movie star. It's at this point Nick Frost's green tea arrived.
Yeah.
No, look, I mean, I don't tend to prepare for roles in terms of that, you know. I mean, my preparation was physical in terms of getting the fighting right and correct and being able to do, you know, 12 weeks of fighting, which is tremendously physical. In terms of the, you know, I prepare for the way I prepare any role. It's not for me about the emotion and how I'm feeling at this point. I feel that's kind of simple in terms of how I wouldn't even think about preparing, you know. I think what it is I look at the script. Obviously Simon Edgar and I have a big long period where I do lots of notes on the script, and then they get it and we go through it all together. So my preparation is for the comedy. How am I going to make this funny? I mean, it's funny anyway, listen, let me say that, but how am I going to perform this so it's the funniest that I can make that line for Simon Edgar? I mean, and then in terms of you know, the emotion. It's, I'm just, I'm, you know, I don't ever feel like I'm an actor portraying an emotion. I'm, when I'm Andy being mad or sad, I am Andy being mad or sad. It's not, you know, it's, you, I think if you were to try and separate, that's, you get a very hollow, lifeless performance. You know, you have to be that person, you know, so if you're, sometimes if you form a scene where you're meant to be grieving, you come away feeling like you're grieving, you know. It's, I had a friend talk to me about a scene that she did. She was doing a play where, I mean, you might not want to put this on the podcast, but where she was essentially sexually molested, violently sexually molested. And like 10 minutes before the show used to start, she used to have the worst panic attack in the world. And she had to go to the doctor in the end, and she explained what she did, and the doctor explained that it was essentially her body preparing her for what was going to happen to her. Because it's not like, you don't have two separate parts of your brain, you know. What your brain understands is, this thing is now happening to me. And it's the same with this, you know, with the way you're preparing for. Yeah. I know it's a comedy and stuff, but it's also a man who hasn't drunk for 20 years because something awful happened to him when he was a younger man, you know, and trying to cope with that. And also trying to cope with Simon's character. You know, I think it's really interesting that he's tried to keep a lid on this man inside of him. Like the Hulk, you know, we call him the Pink Hulk on set, my character, because he eventually erupts, you know. And it's interesting that he's tried to keep a lid on this character for 20 years, but within 3 hours of meeting Simon again, it comes out of him, you know. He's the catalyst. Simon's character's the catalyst.
Yeah. We're getting the wrap-up signal.
I think we're good if you want to keep going.
Okay, all right, a little bit longer, because...
waffling about. I have 2 more minutes? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we just wanted to ask about the physical preparation, because this is the most action that I've seen in one of your films.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there wasn't... I was very fortunate that I did a dance film before I did this film. I had a week between finishing dancing and starting fighting. So for the dance film, I trained every day, 7 hours a day for 7 months to learn how to dance Cuban salsa. So in terms of being physically ready for it, I was always ready to fight. But it was just the fighting, you know, and learning the choreography for the fighting, which, because of the learning dancing, it made it so much simpler. And then we got to work with Brad Allen, who was our stunt coordinator, and he's so quiet, you know. You never know what he's thinking. He's like, I think he's the only Westerner that works for Jackie Chan's team, and you just want to impress him, you know. And I think I was ready to die in front of the cameras to make him like me.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your time. On the Cinematica podcast, we do like our guests to help us out with 2-word reviews of films. I'm going to put you on the spot now. Do you have 2 words that would describe The World's End?
High punching.
Nice.
Fantastic. I'm sure that's better than we could come up with. Nick Frost, thanks very much for being on Cinematica.
Thank you for having me.
What do you recommend?
Beer.
We'll have 5 of those, please. 4 of those and a tap water.
What? Look who it is.
Wow, long time.
Gary.
Willkommen, bienvenue.
Welcome home, boys.
It's not us that's changed, it's the town.
What are you doing?
It's all right, I'm not trying to have sex with you.
There's something I need to tell you right now. Unless you do want to have sex, in which case I'll tell you afterwards.
Tell me right now.
What did he say, sir?
Newton Haven has been taken over by robots.
Did you believe him?
So there you have it, The World's End, which actually gets its public first public screenings in New Zealand because of that whole pesky Dateline thing. And, you know, well, not many people around the world have seen it yet, so this is going to be a sort of semi-exclusive. Simon, you had slightly better seats than us. You're a little bit closer. What did you make of it?
I thought it was an absolute riot.
I have a question, Simon, first, though. Was anyone sitting beside you talking throughout the entire film?
No.
Okay, you definitely enjoyed it more than I did.
Yeah, I had nothing like that sort
of
stuff happening.
Hey, I didn't talk all the way through the
film. No, it was the couple on the other side.
We had, you know, there were definitely, I mean, it was a great atmosphere and people were, you know, yahooing at the right times in the film. I mean, there's a little couple of very funny moments in it, which, you know, where the crowd really got into it and was cheering away. And it was, you know, it's always fun to be in that environment, isn't it? It's always adds a lot more to the film. I must admit, you know, I wasn't expecting a lot. I was a bit disappointed with Hot Fuzz. You know, I love Shaun of the Dead, but Hot Fuzz kind of wasn't the same and missed the mark. But I feel that this film is a return to form for these guys. You know, closer to, it's a film that's closer in my heart to something like Shaun of the Dead. Right. And so I think they pull it off. And the cast that they have is you know, every one of them plays their part and they're superb in the film. So,
yeah, it's a fantastic cast. They've actually gone really wide in terms of getting basically the best of British acting talent, and some of them in quite small roles and some of them in much bigger roles. But they're very generous, aren't they, in that they could easily keep the best bits and the best moments for themselves, but they do share them around. You know, Martin Freeman's got some lovely scenes.
He's got some great lines in there, hasn't he?
Eddie Marsan, who's a wonderful actor, gets to do something that he doesn't normally do. And you know, I just thought that there's a real sort of generosity about it. We should tell people a little bit about what the film's about, and that is that Simon Pegg plays a middle-aged man who's sort of his glory days are back at high school, which is a sort of fairly common theme, isn't it, in movies. And he's gone off the rails. His life hasn't turned out the way that he thought it would. And he's determined to get his mates back together to try and complete the epic 12 pub crawl, the Golden Mile, which they failed to do when they were 18.
On their sort of end of school days, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right. It was like they're about to leave school and head off into the adult world, and their big challenge was this pub crawl, and they failed. And he's never quite recovered from it. Meanwhile, his mates, there's four mates, who have gone on to live fairly normal,
well-adjusted,
run-of-the-mill, mature, grown-up lives.
Successful people, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
And yet he's still got his tape cassette, and he's still got the old car that he bought. I mean, it's amazing how they handle
that. He's living in
the past, isn't he? Yeah, it's a wonderful soundtrack that plays along in the film.
Oh yeah, they've got that absolutely right. They must have the most perfect memories of 1993 because they really nailed it. Anyway, they head back to Newton Haven, the town where they grew up, and they start on this pub crawl. But things don't go according to plan, and as it turns out, Newton Haven is in fact the vanguard of an alien invasion of Earth, and they have stumbled across the plot. The question is, will they be able to get out alive? Will they be able to save the planet? Will they be able to keep their friendship intact? You know, all of that stuff is absolutely at stake, and all of that stuff is given pretty much equal weight as well.
Yeah, and there's a bit of drama though in there as well, isn't there? It's not all just sort of like laugh out loud. There are a few serious moments in the film that relate to their past and events that have happened, and why there's resentments, and they're all really well handled. I mean,
I thought that was the strength of it, actually, was that it had a bit of ticker to it. It had some heart going on underneath all the japery.
And I thought you don't want to explain too much of the end, but I thought the way that the aliens were handled and what their observations of Earth were, and kind of like, well, this is why we're doing this, was quite sort of funny and quite accurate in some ways. You know, they were making a bit of a statement. So
Totally. This is a film where the ending is so perfect that these guys, I said in my written review, which I posted yesterday, that these guys basically make all the other commercial movies that I've seen this year so far look like lazy hackery. You know, the detail that they put into their script, the detail that they put, there's no line that doesn't do two or three things. You know, there's a joke, but it also adds something to character, and it also sets up plot, or it sets up a joke later on. Everything is so efficient. It's kind of ruthless in that how much detail and how much thought they've put in. Because there's also a whole lot of in-jokes, which I'm sure I only got about 20% of. And that was what was annoying you, Kaylee, wasn't it? It was the person sitting next to you who was pointing out all of the references.
Yeah, the person beside me was pointing out all of the sci-fi references, which after a while I couldn't really hear what they were saying. But once I figured out that's what they were doing, I sort of had a bit more appreciation for them talking. But the thing I was getting from the film was all the Edgar Wright, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost in-jokes. And if you know Edgar's body of work, you will recognize so many characters. And there are quite a few actors that are cast in The World's End that are quite similar to characters that they played in Edgar's earlier work. So it was just I could not stop laughing. And Dan, you were sitting beside me, and whenever I saw someone I recognized, I started this like air punch, being like, I know that person.
Yeah,
that
there was that, awesome. And you jabbed me in the ribs.
Yeah. It was great.
You know, it could easily be, with all of the self-referential stuff, it could easily be like totally self-indulgent, but there's something about the love that they have for each other. There's the respect that they have for their talent, the pride they have in the previous work, and the belief that they have that their fans will respect what they do. It's love, and that's what really makes a difference. I don't think there's a cynical bone in any of their bodies, and you know, this is a film that rewards one viewing and then a second viewing to realize and respect all the detail of the plotting. And then for me, who would have got only, like I say, about 20% of the references, watching it on DVD with the commentary track on it to point out all of the other things that I didn't notice, I'm sure I'll get just as much of a kick out of it then as well.
Yes, the ever famous homage-o-meter.
I didn't realize this at the time, but it was when I was doing some research for my review that there's a joke near the end where they're trying to escape in the dirty old black car, and they come across the roundabout that they've gone round respectively earlier on in the film, and they just decide to drive straight over the top of it. And I didn't realize that actually was a joke about Letchworth, the town where they filmed it, which in fact that roundabout was the first roundabout in Britain.
That's right, it's referenced in the film, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's a sign.
But it's classic, really, and it's just so clever. There's so much detail all the way through it that because a lot of their films are about being British, aren't they, you know, and about kind of how being British is different to the rest of the world, you know, and you don't always think in those terms, but they're really sort of they're kind of satirical and yet respectful of the weirdness of English culture, you know, pub culture, cups of tea, all of that sort of stuff. So we asked Nick Frost during our interview if he could come up with two words to describe the film, which he did. It was very gracious about that. I'm going to throw it out to you guys now. Do you want to start, Simon or Kaylee? Who's got two words?
You go. Oh, yeah. I came up with Cornetto Bliss.
Nice.
Yeah, good work. Good reference.
Yes.
And Kaylee?
Yes, I told Nick Frost that my two-word review was fried gold, and he gave me like a thumbs up. Totally. I think he did. I don't know. I imagine he did. He approved.
I'm going to repurpose. I think I said this in the interview. I'm going to repurpose a phrase that he used in the interview. So I'm going to say Pink Hulk.
Nice.
For the world's end. So, look, I as far as I'm concerned, it's the most purely entertaining commercial movie I've seen this year and probably through most of last year. You know, quite often my picks of the year are in the art house, you know, and the commercial stuff disappoints me. But this is right up there. I could watch this over and over again.
It's really efficient. It's tight. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't waste anything. And it has got a lot of heart. And, but I've got to say, I mean, when I was watching, I was sitting there thinking, geez, you know, I'm going to come back with this with about five of my mates. So they're all going to be guys, and we're all going to, like, you know, just have a, you can connect with that film in so many ways when you're younger, and you're all just going to identify with it. And it is, I think it is, you know, I mean, Kaylee, I know you're a big fan, but it is a bit of a lad's film, isn't it? It's, you know, it is a laddish sort of film.
It is.
And I really enjoyed that.
I still connect with it because it's like, I have like packs of girlfriends, and like we go out and
exactly.
we do be ridiculous, yep. and we don't grow up. And, you know, as my friend, my BFFF, Rachel said to me to like wish me luck on Sunday. She said, she always says, you'll always be the peg to my Frost. So
there you go. That's so cool. Mm. All right, time for the news.
We just have a few headlines to start off the news this week. Dan Brown's Inferno has a 2015 release date, but no word on whether Tom Hanks is returning to play Robert Langdon. Also,
we're all on the edge of our seats for that one, aren't we?
Yes. Paranormal Activity 5 has been bumped to 2015. Yay. And Sam Mendes has been confirmed as the director of the next Bond movie, due out in October 2015.
Isn't that great?
It is. I'm so glad that they've sorted that out.
It's relief, isn't it?
I was really nervous.
Yeah, I'm relieved now. I feel like the world is a better place.
Mm-hmm. Now they can go after the Quantum organization that's still running around free after the Quantum of Solace. I'm still really upset that they've decided that that's not a priority.
Exactly. If you've seen Monsters University, which we'll be reviewing shortly, you will have noticed that producer Corey Ray has the letters PGA after her name. This means that she has been deemed by the Producers Guild of America to be the person who actually did the work of producing the film. Yeah. Previously, you might see a long list of names credited as producers, but most of these people might have only been involved via financing, talent representation, or historic accident. Now we can actually give credit where it's due.
Yeah, because real producers actually work blimmin' hard.
They do. I used to work for one. Two. Production assistant. Also not fun. A lot of work. It's fun, but, you know, struggling away.
Making lots of coffee.
I love you guys. Thanks for hiring me. Finally, another reminder that we are visiting Auckland next week for a special live in front of an audience show to coincide with the New Zealand International Film Festival. Woo! Every news item has a woo in the middle of it today. We'll be at the Winter Garden just below the Civic Theatre from 4:30 p.m. next Tuesday afternoon, and recording commences at 5 p.m. sharp. One guest confirmed is Rudy Six, who will be reviewing Behind the Candelabra for us, and he's been wanting to get on the show for ages, and I cannot wait.
Cool, that's going to be good. Yeah, and be there or be...
Square.
That's it.
Yeah, because you can't see Simon Drew Square.
That's right.
Very effective visually, not so much on radio.
It's between us.
Yeah. And that is your news.
Prepare for neural handshake.
Initiating neural handshake in 4, 3...
Release for drop.
2,500 tons of awesome.
The world is coming to an end. Today we face the monsters that are at our door and bring the fight to them. You can finish this. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Pacific Rim. Kaylee, you are our monster and robot correspondent for today.
I could just be the monster correspondent because we have World's End sort of monsters, and last night I watched a double feature of Monsters University and Pacific Rim, so there's a lot going on in my head right now.
don't get
you're not gonna see a giant kind of fluffy monster.
No, I basically haven't slept for a week. It's very exciting. I don't plan to sleep until August. So, yes, Pacific Rim, the new film from Guillermo del Toro, who did Pan's Labyrinth. And this film, if you haven't watched the hilarious trailer, is about a battle for Earth between giant sea creatures / aliens called Kaiju, who rose from the ocean and started destroying cities, sort of like Godzilla. And to combat these giant alien shark beasts, they built robots called Jaegers, and they are battling for Earth, and it's just sort of ridiculous and fun. And most people I know went into this like expecting it to be just like the trailer, like it's just explosions and robots versus aliens, and it's in the ocean and they're fighting and it's gigantic, and
that's pretty much it, isn't it?
It's pretty much it. And unfortunately, I think my expectations were a bit too high for this film. Like, I went in thinking it was going to be, like, a really fun, like, well-done little, like, action piece. And it's Guillermo del Toro. Like, he's a good director. Like, he's got some serious talent.
Yeah.
But it was just like, oh, it was full of actors who you've seen before but couldn't really name. The dialogue was really bad. It's like the acting was a bit stiff.
The acting was awful.
Yeah, and it's like they just spent all of the money on animation up front and then just sort of plopped some live people in.
The worst Australian accents in the history of cinema.
Really?
Maybe the worst Australian accents since Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah.
Really? Worse than that?
Worse than that, I would say. Two of them, there were. And
they had this like token dog for no reason.
Oh, you've got to have a dog. A lovely dog. Do they have to save it?
No, it's just like there.
The point?
It's like, what?
No, it's kind of crappily plotted, badly acted. The characters, there's no sort of character development. There's a lot of exposition in there. Like, these characters are forever explaining stuff to each other that they already know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because when I heard Kaylee sort of, you know, introducing it, I think, yeah, well, okay, the kaiku and the whatever. Hey, you're going to have to explain this stuff, aren't you? You're going to have to set it up. You're going to have to take your time, because, you know.
And they do it over and over and over again.
The first 10 minutes is just voiceover of explaining what's going on. And then it sort of gets into the action, but I
is this based on
true story?
Comics?
No.
Well, I once got frightened. You know, you go diving down far enough, and you see a prawn. It looks quite big. So there are monsters
Maybe that was the inspiration, or maybe that would actually be funnier if the kaiju had been giant prawns. That would have been pretty funny.
There are some scary things. You know, when you got your goggles on, they look a lot bigger. So I just put that out there to everyone. So, okay,
it's not based on a comic book.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
No, and the writer...
Yeah, it's totally original.
Yeah, and the writer, one of the writers, Travis Beecham, also did Clash of the Titans, Dog Days of Summer.
Thank you for Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, so you know what you're in for.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame, isn't it? Because I kind of had visions of I don't know, like Hellboy and you know... I don't know. I just thought Del Toro would be very creative in the way that he would handle it.
Well, there's a lot of creativity there. I would say that the effects, the actual animation of the monsters and the robots is
good.
Absolutely sensational.
Yeah.
Like, there's, I really genuinely believe now that there's nothing that they can't do.
Hmm.
And that's the first time that I've just gone, wow, I'd look at the physics of it, the way that water, like, because a lot of these fights are out at sea, and so there's, you know, they're splashing around in water, and you just totally believe that it is what it is, you know.
They got
the fact
water
that
wings?
You don't care is a different problem.
I bet you there's an image on the internet already with those guys with water wings.
Just having a little swim.
So, oh, okay. So, but the thing is, you know, like, it's funny, my kids are all, you know, aged from 8 to 12, and they all want to go and see it. But it sounds to me like they might get bored if there's so much kind of explaining going on, or not.
Yeah, and it's kind of repetitive. Like, once you've seen one of those fights, you've pretty much seen them all. I don't know. There are a lot of people. I have to say that Kaylee and I are a bit out on a limb here, that there are a lot of people who are really, really enjoying it, and they're enjoying it for what it is rather than for what it isn't. And, you know, it's amazing how forgiving people can be of things that would kill stone dead another film. You know, the fact that the character development is so poor and the dialogue is so dumb. But people are just really forgiving of it, partly because the monsters and the robots are so amazing.
Mm. And it is, it's a really fun film. Like, I think it would have helped if I saw it on a relatively small screen at the multiplex. I think it would have helped if I was on a really big screen, was with some friends, and had some,
you
like...
stoned?
No, I don't do that, Dan. That's illegal. Yeah. I had some beers and just had, like, a blokey ladies' mates' night out to watch it. I think, a smaller screen on a double feature on a cheap Tuesday just is not the place you want to see it.
After you've just seen Monsters University.
Yeah, two very different films.
Okay, do you have two words for it, Kaylee?
My two words for Pacific Rim are, yay, America! With fist pumps.
Cool. My two words for Pacific Rim are Pacific Dumb.
You could have said Pacific Rimmer. I think that would have been nice for your two words, by the way.
Pacific Rimmer?
Yeah.
Ew.
Oh, last week was fine, but that's not. Okay, fine.
It's a different show this week.
Yeah, oh, very, very, very.
Yeah, because it's the school holiday show, so there's going to be kids listening.
Yeah, okay, right. Cut that. Cut it.
Star player has just arrived.
You're my hero!
Yeah! Slow down, Squirt.
This is a party for scare students.
I am a scare student.
I mean, for scare students who actually, you know, have a chance.
Just wait, Hotshot. I'm going to scare circles around you this year.
Time to go to work.
Scary feet, scary feet, scary feet. The kid's in the bathroom. Angry poodle. Jazz clown. My Aunt Phyllis. In the morning.
All right, so this is the school holiday roundup. There are so much animated kids fodder floating around. We're just going to give a quick survey of it. We'll start off with Monsters University. Kaylee, you saw that last night.
Yep, saw it, loved it, recommend it highly.
Yep, I'm with you. Loved it.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh my god!
It's just because I remember when Monsters University came out. I loved it. I love Pixar films. I grew up watching them. And it's I can just give you my two-word review right now, which explains it all, why I liked it so much, is just nostalgia factor.
Ah.
Right there.
And Si, you were enthusiastic too.
Yeah, I mean, I'd seen Despicable Me 2 a week or two before that, you know, and again, the kids went and we saw this Monsters University on the weekend. And, you know, I think people have got, you know, the box office is got everyone confused because Monsters University is a much better film than Despicable Me 2. Despicable Me 2 is kind of off the, you know, it doesn't, I don't know, I mean, it's actually a bit of a, you know, it doesn't have any messages and it doesn't sort of, it's a bit sort of, you know, the kids aren't actually that important in it and all the rest of it. I mean, Despicable Me didn't hit the same mark for me. Monsters University is all about friendship, working hard.
Finding your potential.
Yep, finding your potential, you know, not giving up. It's got all these great messages that come out through the film for kids. Yep. And I thought, you know, this is great. This is really, really good. And it's funny and it bubbles along at a nice pace. You know, it's a much, much better film for me than Despicable Me 2.
I think on the surface, I think you're absolutely right. I think all of those things are true that, except for me, Monsters University, it just never took off. Like my memory of the first Monsters film is that, you know, I absolutely adored it. It was the film that cemented my love of Pixar. I've watched it several times since, and it's just so inventive. The character relationships are so great. And for this one, I just felt it just felt really straight to video to me. You know, like one of those Disney sequels that really didn't belong in the movies.
But isn't that character? I've forgotten his name. The guy with the one eye,
Mike.
Mike. I mean, isn't he such a great character? Because, you know, and it starts
he's
with
so
friends.
Optimistic, isn't he?
Yeah, he's so optimistic, and he works hard, and he has a plan, and nothing's going to stop him. You know, like when he's at the beginning of the film, they're picking friends. You know, of course, he ends up not being picked, and he's with the teacher. You know, and you think, geez, you know, so many kids can identify with that pressure. You know, that moment where you're in that situation, and you're being. I mean, and it was really well handled. I mean, I thought, and yet he was so upbeat from that. You know, his character doesn't really miss a beat. It keeps he's still going to be positive, and he's still going to get on with things.
You're absolutely right. I can't argue with any of those of that at all.
You just there's no rockets or explosions. I mean, and that's fine.
No. I think all of that's fine. It just felt to me that the humor and the action weren't at the same level as I remembered it. But
I didn't see the first one, Dan. To be fair,
what?
Yeah.
Okay, well, no, that's cool. Yeah. See, the thing about Despicable Me, though, and this is why I think for little kids particularly, it will trump everything, and that is fart jokes.
Yeah, look, I agree. I mean, it's got all that stuff. Even though there's the odd joke like that in Monster. I mean, what about that pig? They stole that pig. I mean, there's some funny stuff in there, you know.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's probably not as – there's not that level of humor in it.
No. Do you think that
our kids have got to aim higher, man. Come on.
Yeah. Do you think that this is an example of, like, we've got three films that are all being released at the same time? We've got Monsters University, we've got Epic, and Despicable Me, and actually they're aimed at three slightly different age groups.
Mm.
And like a Despicable Me, I reckon is aimed fair and square at 4 to 6 year olds, you know, like really young. There's not
the and plot family is though, not yeah, very, and
you know. Sorry?
I mean, but they all have, I mean, I haven't seen Epic, but they all have that adult humour for them, you know, they all kind of have a...
For the grown-ups who
yeah,
are
Yeah, there's
who,
all that
who
sort of stuff thrown in, yeah.
That's true, but, you know, you can see, and you can see why the Minions are going to get a film all of their own.
Yes.
Because they're the reason why the kids absolutely love the Despicable Me films, that and the little girl who's just so cute.
Yeah.
But you know, it's pitched at a really young age. It's such a young age that you can't drop the kids off and leave them by themselves. You have to pay for an adult ticket to sit beside them. So you know, it's doubling your box office instantly. Epic, which has anybody else seen it? You haven't seen it, Si. Caitlin?
No, I didn't get a chance to see it.
Right. Well, we'll just Epic is pitched at slightly older. I think it's more sort of 12 to 14s. And so I wonder whether there is actually a market for all three of these films. They're not necessarily competing directly against each other.
I think you'd rather have them not there at the same time. If you were the distributor, you know, you'd like to have the holidays to yourself. But you're right, though, Dan. I think from what I've seen and read of Epic, it looks like it's aimed at a slightly older, young female audience. with a few environmental type messages sort of thrown in there.
And there's a strong sort of teenage girl heroine central character. I took my niece who's 11 to it, and she really enjoyed Epic. And in fact, she sort of embarrassed me a little bit because she could recognise a lot of the celebrity voices in the film, and I couldn't. She was watching the credits roll at the end, and she said, "Oh, I thought that was Pitbull." I'm thinking, who's Pitbull?
Yeah, that's right.
He's a rapper, apparently. Beyonce, she recognised Beyonce's voice as the queen. And even better, and this is where I'm really proud, she recognised Chris O'Dowd from the Sapphires.
Oh, that's good going. Yeah, that is good
going. Pretty cool, isn't it? So yeah. good on Aroha for that. But she did like it. But the thing about Epic that got me, and it's the same problem that I had with Rise of the Guardians at Christmas, is that actually the animation itself, the character design, I find really unattractive. And there's like it's not cute. There's kind of stylized. It's like I'm not even sure how you would describe it, but it's not classic animation like cartoon characters, but it's not like hyper realistic human figures either. There's just something about it. I just didn't want to watch it because it was so damn ugly. So that was my problem. Whereas again, the story itself has got quite a lot of positives to it. It's got the environmental message. It's got enough stuff for kids and adults, and it's got a lot more action than the other two films. There's a lot more sort of flying around and chase scenes and what have you. So you know, there's definitely something in it. But I get the feeling that poor old it's not DreamWorks, I don't think. I think it's Fox, isn't it, Epic? That they're just going to struggle up against the heavy hitters of Pixar and Despicable Me, which is just this steamroller.
Well, I would say to all those parents out there, my first choice would be Monsters University, just for the code that it puts on
for the message. Kids.
Yeah, for the message. And I mean, Despicable Me, the first one kind of had a message, you know, were these kids going to be looked after, were they not, and all that sort of thing. The second one doesn't go near that sort of stuff. It doesn't have those sort of strings, and it's a bit kind of like, you know, will he meet this girl or not? It's an adult romance in a way. I mean, it's kind of like a little
bit
annoying.
That's true. Exactly, the first Despicable Me film, it's like, is the bad guy going to learn his lesson?
That's right. And so it has a real charm to it and a message, whereas, and I think these films, you know, like, so often you see them, they're actually quite bad messages they send. You know, the kids are pretty sort of, sometimes they're quite awful, and then they have no sort of, you know, there's no sort of message being sent by the film except to look after yourself or whatever. I mean, I just say that sometimes, you know, they're wider than mark. Whereas this, I thought, Monsters University, that's my pick for these holidays. That's the one I'd recommend people go and see.
Okay, well, do you want to use two words for it?
No, I don't, because I haven't thought any. I used all my good stuff up on the Cornetto one and the Rimmer.
Well, look, seeing as we're talking about three films, that we'd end up being like 9 two-word reviews. So let's just flag it, shall we? Because otherwise we'll be here all day.
Just, yeah.
But I think I can't argue.
Graduation. I'm just going to use one word. Monsters Graduation. That's two.
All right.
I'm changing like the wind. I'm like a wind.
You are.
Like a willow in the wind bending away right now. I'm just like. You see, if you could see the office right now, you'd be amazed that me and Kaylee were like
interpretive dance.
Interpretive dance.
That's our keyword of year is interpretive dance.
We only do that when you're not here. It's a special thing between us. There you go.
I feel so lucky.
Well, there's extra room. I feel if we did this, there'd be like
That's right.
Accidental like
microphones have been knocked over and coffee spilt, but not today.
No,
it's great. Mm. We can do a bit of Pilates later, maybe. I don't know.
Right.
We'll see.
This is a very big week for Cinematica because in addition to all of the commercial films that we've been talking about and the Nick Frost interview, well, it's also the opening week of the New Zealand International Film Festival in Auckland, which is on Thursday, tomorrow, as we're recording on a Wednesday. And so we have a special episode of the show, which we're posting at roughly the same time, which will include our interview with the festival director, Bill Gosden, and various members of the staff. I actually wandered around the Wellington office for the New Zealand International Film Festival last week, chatting to people about their jobs. And this is a kind of mini documentary, which is about what it takes to actually put the event on. You know, like there's always so much focus on the films, and that's kind of justified, I suppose. But we don't realize that this is actually a massive undertaking every year. And because they're so good at it and because they're so experienced, we don't realize quite how much work goes on behind the scenes. It's a bit like, what do they say, that you know, when you see a duck floating around on a pond, you don't see the legs frantically kicking below the surface. And I think the festivals are a little bit like that. Earlier on today, I spoke with Lynn Smart, who's the Auckland manager of the festival, who I'm told doesn't give interviews. She reminded me that this is a very, very special occasion. So we'll also be including a chat with her. She's been involved with the festival in Auckland for 24 years.
Well,
so
that's worthy of an interview, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. So that's an extra special episode, and you'll find that in your iTunes feed and up on the website as well. And, you know, definitely worth an extra sort of 40, 45 minutes of your time, I think. So that is our show for this week. Oh, I'm a bit breathless. We've covered so much ground, haven't we?
We have.
Next week on the show, we're on tour, recording live in Auckland. Bring as many of your mates as possible, because we just want to see lots of your happy, smiling faces out there while we learn how to do this in front of an audience.
And bring your two-word reviews. No Twitter. I'm just going to point at people in the audience.
And we want to hear, yeah, that's a good call. Put them under pressure.
Yeah.
All right. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget you can click subscribe in iTunes or your own favorite Androidy podcasting software, so the latest episode always gets downloaded automatically, and you can listen while you're jogging around Oriental Bay. Please leave us feedback at the iTunes store. You know, ratings, reviews, all that stuff, super useful. They make sure that more people discover the show. Our ratings are growing every month, and we're thrilled about that. But yeah, we could always do with new listeners. You can contact us with your two-word reviews and your other feedback at these locations.
You can find us on Twitter via @CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast. You can find us on Letterboxd as Cinematica, where you can read our two-word reviews, and as always, on our homepage at cinematica.co.nz.
All right, the show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're going to leave you with some more music. We're playing you out with, and the three of us that have seen The World's End will know how appropriate this is. This is the Sisters of Mercy, This Corrosion, the gothic masterpiece. Probably won't play all 10 minutes of it, though. Just bear that in mind. Until next week, that's all from me.
Good night from me.
And all from me.